Welcome to the Manx Theatre Podcast.
Come on to the theatre.
Hello, and welcome back to episode 79 of the Manx Theatre Podcast with me, Neil Callan. Thank you to everyone who's listened to our previous episodes. If you're brand new to the podcast, welcome along and thanks for joining us. In this podcast, we like to try and keep you up to date with what's going on in theatre on the Isle of Man, chatting to the cast and creatives of upcoming shows to find out a little more about the shows and the people behind them, and also what our Manx born and bred performers are doing further afield.
Coming up on this week's podcast,
I'm joined by Alex Duncan and Duren Brideson from the Service Players production of The Good Life, which opens at the Gaiety Theatre this Thursday night. You can still listen to all of our previous episodes through all the usual podcast outlets and at manxradio.com/podcasts. If you're enjoying the podcasts, whilst you're there, make sure to give us a like, a 5-star review and click subscribe or follow or wherever it is you need to do to make sure you never miss an episode. Giving the podcast a review also helps make it more available for other listeners to find. Now, keeping on the theme of the Service Players, they've recently announced their cast for their November production of Dracula, which sees John Walker taking on the role of the eponymous Count Dracula. Charlie Williams will be playing Jonathan Harker, Alex Duncan, Professor Abraham von Helsing, Andrew Dighton will be playing Robert Renfield, the monster will be portrayed by Toby Smith, Mina Grant will be played by Kira Mackey, Margaret Sullivan will be played by Rachel Martin, Rob Pritchard will be playing Dr. Thomas Seward, Ray Kareen, apologies if I've pronounced your name wrong, will be playing Mariska. Rachel Jockin will be playing Alira. Lisa Smith will be playing Verona. Laura Johnson will be playing the child. Michelle Caine playing Lucy Westphal. And I will be playing Norbert Briggs. Professor Van Helsing and his brave comrades must hunt down and destroy the profoundly evil Count Dracula. But the Count is exceedingly resourceful, employing superhuman strength, psychic powers and shape-changing to confound and frustrate his antagonists, culminating in a wild and shocking confrontation between the King of Vampires and those who would rid the world of him. This adaptation is an action-packed, blood-soaked retelling of Bram Stoker's classic tale of horror. With stage direction by Kim Childs and creative direction by Alessandro Mazzotta, Dracula will run at the Gaiety from the 5th to the 7th of November 2026. This week, Reckless Sleepers present The Last Supper at King's Court Theatre in Castletown, from Wednesday the 24th to Friday the 26th. The Last Supper is an intimate performance for 39 people. The performers will eat the last words and recall the last moments of famous people throughout history. And to some of the audience, they'll serve the last meal requests from prisoners who were on death row in Texas. This episode has been made possible by funding from the Isle of Man Arts Council. For details of the funding available and the application deadlines, check out their website at iomarts.com. Now, I can't end the news section without sending huge congratulations to Jack Divers and Molly Bowman, who recently got engaged whilst on holiday at Disney. Congratulations, guys. All the very best, and we look forward to the wedding. Right, well, that's all the news for now, but make sure you keep up to date with what's going on between episodes by following Manx Theatre Podcast on both Facebook and Instagram.
You're listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast with Neil Callan.
Okay, joining me now on the podcast are Alex Duncan and Duren Brideson from The Service Players, ahead of their production of 70s sitcom gold, The Good Life, which runs at the Gaiety Theatre from the 25th to the 27th of June. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Very thank happy you. To be here.
Alex, welcome back.
Thank you.
You have been here before.
I have. I
think it was School of Rock, so yes. I think that was probably about 18 months ago.
Yes. Gosh, has it really been that long?
My pelvis is still recovering.
And also, congratulations as well. Award-winning performance.
Thank you. Thank you. How spoilt. It was one of those joyous little parts where you got to run in, show off, run out, fit into leather trousers. Perfect.
Excellent. And play a bit of air guitar as well.
All of that.
Excellent. And Duren, welcome. This is your first time on the podcast.
It certainly is.
So, gentlemen, we're here today to talk about the Service Players' upcoming production of The Good Life. Obviously, this was a staple of 70s TV. Looking at Actor Online today, it actually finished broadcasting the original episodes before I was born.
So, give me a date, Neil.
June 1978.
Okay, so I will have been one when it stopped. But isn't that funny that it was still part of my childhood?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I must have seen every episode, I don't know, 4, 5, 6
yep,
times
easily,
over at least?
Easily.
Constantly rerunning.
I've been thinking about it because not only was it a part of my childhood, but it continued to be a part of my life. When I lived in London for 20 years, we still had the DVD and we would still endlessly watch it, probably as an anecdote to Southeast London.
Yes.
The good life helps when you're living in Peckham.
Yeah.
So its longevity and its appeal has never waned, certainly for me.
I'm sure if we probably flicked on the Sky Planner now and looked down to UK Gold or something, it's probably on.
You
right
would
now.
Find it very easy.
Yeah. Or yesterday or something like that. Yeah. So for those people who've not managed to come across it in their time, can you give us a rough idea of the story behind, like, no, the setup for the show?
Well, the setup for the show almost sounds far more serious than the actual execution of the show, because it's about a couple who live a very, very typical suburban life in the 70s. They have the car, they have the house, they have the job, and the husband, Tom, is in a period of midlife delusion about all of this. So he decides in his rebellion against modern life to go what he terms as self-sufficient, to refuse to give any more money to the man, to the bill payers, to the gas, the electricity, the phone, and to live as independently as they possibly can. Now, that makes it sound quite highfalutin and quite grand, but in fact, it wears that incredibly lightly and joyously. So you've got this brew of this beautiful 70s, quite left ideology, but actually in a jacket of light silliness.
Yes.
That pokes a finger at itself very well. So it may feel deep in some of its themes, but it is joyously daft as well.
And in complete opposition to that, you've got the neighbours as well, haven't you, that are...
Who are surely two of comedy's greatest characters. And again, they poke the finger at themselves very well. You have Margot and Jerry, who are the epitome of 70s upper class, certainly attempting to reach even higher into the class that they possibly can. And John and Lisa, who are playing both these parts, they will steal it. They're absolutely gorgeous, and they've taken such delight in these two gorgeous characters.
And they're kind of, like I said, they're at the opposite ends of the spectrum, aren't they? Living next door to each other, and you've got Tom and Barbara, who are digging over their front and back gardens, turning into veggie patches, having animals, whatever. And then you've got Jerry and Margot are there, and they're trying to live the highest possible
perfect. And it does. It sounds like one of those perfect British recipes for comedy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And what this adaptation has done so well is you will recognise, sure, if you know the show, you will recognise a lot of it and a lot of the lines, but it's taken probably about four seasons, and knitted them together. But it's got quite an original through line, which is its own. So as an adaptation, I think it's quite a beautiful one, where it balances the old and the new quite cleverly, I think. Mm.
And rather than being like we've had previously with Blackadder and Credibly, Dad's Army, where we have been physically three episodes been stitched together to make a play, this has actually been a proper sort of play adaptation.
This is a play adaptation by Jeremy Sams. This was written specifically for the Theatre Royal in Bath, I think it opened. And it's very new. It's only 2 or 3 years old, so it's a very, very new version. And a riotous one. I think it's the most gorgeous evening. It's wholesome. It's daft. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's nostalgic, but still, I think those themes are incredibly appealing. I think still you look at Tom and Barbara in a wistful way of going, oh, actually, they are couple goals in many ways, aren't they?
They're such warm and friendly characters. Well, expertly played in the TV series by Richard Price.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful.
Felicity Kendall.
And you can't compete with that. And in a way, you don't attempt to compete with that.
No.
Because they're such iconic performances that if you were to in any way attempt an impersonation of that, you would just fail. So all you do is you take the script as it is and you give it your all and give what you can do to it.
Yes. So we've worked out, obviously, that you're playing Tom. Mm. And Michelle Caine, the lovely Michelle Caine, is playing your darling wife, Barbara.
Who is just a joy and poor woman having to play my wife. But from first rehearsal, we have an absolute hoot together. So she's so easy to perform opposite.
And then Margot and Jerry next door are Lisa Smith and John Walker.
Who you will just adore. adore as much as we adore playing them. But of course, we've got with June and with Rachel, we've got two character actors who have been brought into it, and it has been adapted this way where both of these actors are forced to play
everyone else,
everybody else, and that is the gimmick. It has been written that way, but you will see it's a real treasure trove for both of them.
So Duan, you're playing Sir Andrew Ferguson, Harry the Pigman, Dr. Joe and the Policeman.
Yes, indeed. All four characters. Five changes of costume. So the main challenge coming out of this, I think, is going to be simply being able to get from costume to costume without coming back on stage half-dressed. But we'll see. If I manage that, then I'll count it a success. But I came into this latterly role and sort of been doing it for about 3 or 4 weeks now. The first rehearsal I came to, I thought, this is bloody marvellous. It's just really a really good play. It's really... The performance has come together already. I just feel like I have to kind of slot in and do my best to not let Rudy down.
But it's a nice little six-hander, and I guess it must be nice. I mean, I'm currently working in a cast of 12, and that's great because there's so little extra required. Everyone there has a purpose and a reason, and with six of you as well, it must be.
Well, also we're quite used to on the island for our big company shows, aren't we? So and they'll have vast numbers in them, which is absolutely fantastic. But to have such a small, close crew is quite special.
Yeah.
And all it does is enable you to build those friendships. I mean, certainly with a play this big, I know for me as Tom, it's actually a huge part. It is the Hamlet of 1970s sitcom.
There are several pages of dialogue there.
They're vast. And because it's sitcom, it flows at such a pace, and sitcom actors were absolute pros. They were having to learn this stuff overnight, week after week. But that pace needs to be there. So as a learning challenge and as a physical performing challenge, you've got to be on it like a bonnet, really.
Yeah. And looking at the characters that you're playing, Duan, you've got, Sir Andrew Ferguson. He's kind of the big boss man, isn't he, at the company?
People will remember him, I think, as being quite bombastic and generally engaging, and not offensive in any way. But I mean, he
was never really a fan of Tom, though, was he?
No, he didn't. Never remembered his name, so it's always
thingy from the fourth floor.
Yeah, until the very end, without creating any. Yeah,
no spoilers.
No spoilers. But yeah, and then the other characters, Harry the Pigman is—I can't actually remember him from the series, but he certainly fits into this particular version. The policeman in the pig scene, who people will remember as being one of the more sympathetic characters.
Yeah,
and what's the other? Oh, yeah,
Dr. Joe.
Again, I don't remember from the series, but again, he fits in quite well to the overall storyline. So it's an interesting trying to get them all different characters and make sure that they are distinctive and that they're coming across as that.
Yeah.
But we're working on that.
Being as we have Harry the Pigman, and we all know that the TV series featured livestock quite heavily.
Yeah.
Will there be livestock at the Gaiety?
We can't possibly tell you that.
Whoa.
You cannot know such things.
Because I know you had a rather fun day up at the children's farm.
We had the most glorious day of filming at the children's farm. So should we call that method, in a way, to get in and start worrying the pigs and the chickens? I am. I'm putting it down there. I am calling that our method preparation. But you will wait and see. But it's being directed by Toby Smith, who's got a great eye for comedy. I've known Toby for over 30 years and he understands comedy perfectly. So you will see elements of pantomime. You will see elements of trickery in there. A little bit for everyone, I hope.
And speaking of Toby there, obviously this is he's directing the show. Mm. This is his second, foray to directing. Mm. I've been in many plays with Toby over the years. I've known Toby for a very long time, and keeping Toby under control is an interesting task. And so how does it work with Toby being the one trying to keep everyone else under control?
It's an interesting reversal, isn't it?
And I think he has pulled it together quite well. He's got to be the statesman, really. And in terms of direction, it's strangely straightforward in some respects to let the actors go with their ideas, but actually it's strangely tricky in others, because it is a for something that will fly along at 100 miles an hour, it is quite technical. It's certainly proppy. There's a lot of movement involved, and all of which he has to juggle. So I feel quite glad that I'm just the one who has to remember my lines.
I'm just thinking back to the TV series. A lot of it seemed to take place in Tom and Barbara's kitchen, didn't it? Yeah, so around that big table, you've got the big arguer and...
And don't forget that was all in front of a live studio audience at the time.
And it is quite different because, of course, it was, as Duan said, it was filmed before a live studio audience. So you do feel that theatricality of those comedies of the period. But that does nothing but grow and grow and has to grow when you're considering it as a theatre piece than just a television piece.
Excellent. And also, what also helps is the fact we've got Kim Childs probably pushing Toby and keeping Toby in order as well.
With a whip.
We didn't really talk about Rachel Jockin either. Rachel Jockin is playing Margaret Felicity Ferguson. Sir Ferguson's wife, Milkwoman and Mary.
I find it quite tricky to act with her because I can't actually watch her because I will bite my lip. it is genuinely quite tricky. She is an absolute riot. And again, I genuinely cannot wait for the audience to see the silliness of these characters coming in and out and playing every part. I think it's something really, really, really special.
I mean, can we give an idea of the story, or
it goes from the very, very first episode, and the pilot is often not watched because the pilot, there is none of the traditional Good Life thing in there. There is a man on the edge.
Right, okay.
At the beginning, and there is a man going through what he considers his midlife crisis before he has this idea, and Barbara also has this idea. And it starts from there, and it grows through their attempt at self-sufficiency towards their success at what they're doing, but still various parts of their life, whether it's Margot and Jerry or whether it's Duan as Sir, trying to hammer them down or make them continue to be the cogs in the modern wheel that they continue to rage against.
Marvellous.
When you think about the original Good Life, it's kind of... four characters that basically launched their careers from that one comedy series. It was quite phenomenal, really, in terms of how their careers kind of blossomed from there into what they're, God rest their souls, some aren't with us anymore, but it's certainly been quite an iconic comedy.
Well, I think Dickie Bryer has spent the rest of his career trying to ever so slightly battle his way out of what he was thought, because Tom is so nice.
Yes.
He is such a lovely man.
Yeah.
And I suppose nowadays you'd call him the epitome of positive masculinity, wouldn't you?
Bit like Ted Lasso.
Yeah. But I think he was so determined to stretch his wings after that he sought out ever-decreasing circles, where, of course, he is utterly vile.
Yeah.
And, again, sought out as many villains as he possibly could. Mm. In films, you know, fortunately formed a lovely relationship with Ken Branagh and was able to play the villain for him several times.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think part of the beauty of the show, and I think why it's so special now, is that you are seeing nice people being nice to each other.
Yes.
And my God, isn't that rare? And it's part of its absolute delight and charm, I think.
Yeah, and that's a nice theme for the summer as well.
Gorgeous.
We've got lots of nice people being nice to each other, and it's just perfect. Yeah. I mean, I was reading this afternoon, actually, that The Good Life was actually written for Richard Bryars.
Mm. Yeah, so, it was a vehicle for him.
Yeah.
And it's about a man turning 40 in the first episode, and I think he was about 41, 42. Of course, you had the wonderful Felicity Kendall, who I think was in her mid-20s.
Yeah.
Who
shocking,
yeah, and of course she became an absolute starlet,
yes,
didn't she?
I'm sure there's a reference to Felicity Kendall in an episode of Red Dwarf.
It wouldn't surprise me in any way, and I suspect it's quite a lewd one.
Well, I think they passed a moon the same exact same shape as Felicity Kendall's bum.
Yes,
orbited around that for a few days before they moved on.
You're listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast.
Okay, so Alex, you've already been on before. We've talked to you about your past and your wonderful history with the RSC and the Globe, treading the boards and the professional aspect. But June, we've not had you before. Give us a little insight about how you got into things. How did you get started in theatre? What was it that got you going?
I was in the Arbury Players for many, many years. The parents and various other people in Bollebygd set that up in the 1970s. The first shows were all in the Bollebygd Village Hall, which mm-hmm. was quite a challenging environment. But the first play they put on, I think, was called Murder at the Bugginses. And that had a full box set built on the stage. And that was, I mean, the audience kind of gave a standing ovation just when the curtains opened, because they had never seen anything like that in Bollebygd before, and probably not since. So, yeah, I spent many years with them, many fond memories of Arbury Players, many pantomimes and whatever through the years. The first big play, I suppose, I did was the All-Ireland play, which they did in 1997, thereabouts.
So Winter's Tale?
Midsummer Night's Dream.
No, oh, Midsummer Night's Dream,
okay. Yeah, before Winter's Tale. And that was a fantastic production to take part in, and it was just so good-natured. Everybody was really good. I mean, the director was really on top of it, and we had Dorothy Lowy kind of doing the kind of local assistant director bit, and it just really worked. It was a fantastic show. I was playing Puck in that.
Oh, marvellous.
So that was, and then many shows with Service and Legion and Russian and whatever since then. So.
And whoever needs someone to fill in.
Busy, you know, chair.
I'm a bit
when it comes to these things.
I'm the same. There's not many companies that I've yet to work with, but I think Paradox is still one of those, Charlie. Yeah, just make sure you listen, Charlie. Have you ever made the transition over to a musical, or has it always been a straight play?
I've never been in musicals for reasons that will become obvious when I open my mouth and try and sing. It's really not a pleasant experience for anybody. I did sing in one pantomime once, which was unfortunately behind a latex mask, so I couldn't actually hear the piano, and I could hear myself all too well, so it was, that wasn't the best of shows.
It's never great trying to sing inside a mask, is it? It sounds an awful lot louder, and you can hear too much of yourself sometimes.
I was in opera a couple of times, but that was just as a walk-on part. But it was fantastic. I mean, down the Mananan Festival, it was really rewarding to be part of that show, even though you were paid not to sing. That was good.
Great. What's the favourite thing that you've done? What's been the best show or the best role?
Apart from Midsummer Night's Dream, that was obviously iconic performance. there's lots of... So many shows down the years. We had one called The Extraordinary Revelations of Orca the Goldfish, which was just a little one act by David Tristram, but it was just a fantastic play, and he kind of condensed a three-act play down into one act, so all the jokes and the gags were kind of one after the other. That was a really good show. What else? We took I Dream Before I Take the Stand. That was an Arlene Phillips one we did in the one-act festival a couple of years ago. We took that away to the All Winners in Hampstead. That was an interesting experience. Yeah, just lots of shows over the years. It's kind of
okay. We've all been in shows of varying budgets. Is there a best and worst costume that you've ever had to wear?
They probably both fall under the pantomime banner, I guess. I love the villains in pantomime. They obviously have the best of the shows. I can't remember the worst costume I've ever had. There must be a fair number of contenders up there.
I mean, I've spoken to lots of people that have done stuff with musical theatre, and things like Ian Dixon, who said both the best and the worst costume that he ever had to wear was the Shrek costume. It was the best because it looked amazing, but my word, it was so hot and sweaty. It was just horrendous. Oh, do you know what? I had a couple of new questions, so I could probably throw this in at you as well, Alex.
Okay.
You're allowed to keep one prop or costume from any show that you've been in. What is it and why?
Oh, it's so hard. Now, you did mention costumes, and I do remember being in a tour of a play version of the film Tunes of Glory, which is an astonishing film set just after the Second World War in a Scottish barracks. And huge budget tour, and we used the costumes from the film, which meant that one of the cast, and we don't know who, was wearing Alec Guinness's kilt.
Oh.
And one of the cast was wearing John Mills's kilt.
Right.
I don't know who it is, or who it may have been me.
Yeah.
I may have been wearing one of those sacred kilts, but I think that would be a fantastic one. That would be great.
Yeah, in a similar vein, when I did Sunset Boulevard back in 2014, I noticed one night when I took off my costume that the the label on the back of my shirt said producer's accountant. It's probably closest to getting into the producers that I'm ever going to get.
I like that.
Have you got one, Duren?
I don't know. Props-wise, I suppose, when we did Orc of the Goldfish, the final scene was, there's a live goldfish in there for the performance, and the final scene, it had to die, basically. So without killing the goldfish, we went and bought a dead goldfish and kind of put that in the bowl. It had some sort of weird mechanism rigged up so that we could kind of turn it around. So the live goldfish became a dead goldfish. But unfortunately, the live goldfish was far too keen on his stage presence and leapt over the barrier. So we had two goldfish. And,
I love it.
It's a miracle.
Just for the sheer storyline on that one, I'd probably keep that, I think.
Just thinking about Orca, it's like free will, isn't it?
It is.
Jumping over the barrier on the way out.
Bid for freedom.
Right, okay, so I think we probably better wind up now because you guys have got rehearsals to get into. But before we do, way back in 2020, gosh, it feels like a long time ago now, after the first big lockdown, we set up our Spotify playlist. Now, this was a playlist that was our ultimate musical theatre playlist, which was comprised of songs that were either songs that we've sung, they've been from shows that we've been in, or they're just the songs that mean something special to us. Neil King and I, when we set up the playlist, we each put 10 songs in to get it going, because a playlist with two songs in is very quick. And, it's not a great listen. So we each put 10 songs in to get it going. Then every person that's come on the podcast since then has added their own song. Alex, I know you've already had one in, but I'm feeling kind, so I'm going to let you
add another. Thanks, Nick.
What song would you like to add?
I was about to put you on the spot and ask what song I put in. But the song that I'm going to add is Sondheim, because Sondheim's probably the greatest storyteller from musical theatre. And I'm going to add in Our Time from Merrily We Roll Along.
Oh, lovely.
This was the final song in my end of year showcase at drama school, which, for those who don't know it, it's vile in every way. Every end of term. So every student performs with a partner and performs a scene. And it's performed in one of the theatres in London, and it's performed to a room of agents and casting directors and what have you. And it's wholly unpleasant and wholly necessary.
Yes.
At the same time. And this was the final song. And it is beautiful. It is youthful. It is moving. And so many fantastic lines that are almost part of day-to-day dialogue, aren't they? Movers and shapers and what have you. So what a song.
It's one of those melodies that just comes back again and again and again and again throughout the show.
It's magical.
Just as we were talking there, and I'm rifling through the pages of the list, and I come across it, and I suddenly have a very vivid memory of our discussion about Wonder and The Lord of the Rings, the musical.
What a tune.
All 18 hours of it.
That is long, but that is a tune. And I keep on, I'm shouting at everybody to keep on looking at the rights for that show. That's one where I jump on straight away.
Fantastic. Right, Duren, have you made a choice?
I was thinking about it, and I'm no expert in musicals, to be honest, but for reasons previously mentioned. But it could be anything from the Rocky Horror Picture Show, I suppose. But then having heard Margot's rendition of A Sound of Music, I think that's going to be one of my favourite things now, so I can go in.
Sound of Music?
Yeah.
Lovely. Right, again. Marvellous. Right, well, we'll get those added onto the playlist, and they'll be up very shortly for people to enjoy.
Thanks.
I think we're in the region of somewhere ridiculous around about 140 songs on there now. It's about 9 hours.
I love that.
I mean, that's a good day, painting the back bedroom.
That is a long dog walk, isn't it?
It certainly is. Right, okay, so before we go, we must mention that the majority of this cast are back again later this year.
We've got a very different show coming up, haven't we?
Yes.
And you're in it, Neil.
I am, yes, and I'm quite excited about
And,
this.
You know, the show that's coming up, I felt quite unprofessional, because as soon as it was announced, I started bullying people. And I started emailing people and lightly threatening members of the production team.
I've not even seen the script yet.
To make sure that I was in this. So I am so deeply excited about Dracula.
Yes. And you're playing Van Helsing.
I am. And considering that I am born and bred on Buffy,
yeah,
this feels very close to my heart.
I mean, Van Helsing and Tom Good can't be much further apart, can they?
You'd be surprised. Both very good with a pitchfork.
Okay, so that's Dracula, and that's coming up in November, and that'll be at the Gaiety Theatre. But more about that closer to the time. So, The Good Life is running at the Gaiety Theatre from Thursday the 25th to Saturday the 27th of June. All three shows are at 7:30 p.m. If you've not done so already, you can get your tickets now from thevillagaiety.com or by calling 600-555. Alex Dewan, thanks for joining me today. And we wish you and everyone at the Service Players all the very best for your run.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast.
Okay, let's have a quick look forward to what's currently planned for this year. First up is the Service Players, with their first main production of the year. And this will be the staging of the 70s TV favourite, The Good Life, which we've just been talking about earlier on this podcast. This runs at the Gaiety this week from the 25th to the 27th of June, so that's Thursday through to Saturday. Next, in July, from the 10th to the 18th, Two Feathers Productions are back for their fourth production of Come From Away, which charts the stories of the locals of Gander, Newfoundland, and the passengers of 38 jumbo jets forced to land there when the US airspace was closed following the terrorist actions on 9/11/2001. I'll be chatting with some, or all of the cast, in the next episode. In August, from the 5th to the 15th, Taylorian Productions bring their 20th anniversary production of Cats to the Gaiety Theatre. You'll need to dust off your air guitars for Rock of Ages, brought to the Gaiety by Centre Stage Productions from the 9th to the 17th of October. Then, as Alex and I mentioned earlier, from the 5th to the 7th of November, the Service Players are back again with Dracula at the Gaiety Theatre. Also, at the Gaiety in November, we have Stage Door Entertainments with the Great British Bake Off musical, running from the 12th to the 14th. Then, rounding off the year, Stage Aid are back this Christmas for the Gaiety Panto, which will be Beauty and the Beast. Tickets are on sale now. Well, with that, we bring episode 79 to a close. Thanks once again to Alex and Dewan for joining me on the podcast, and we wish them and everyone at the Service Players involved with The Good Life all the very best for their run. Don't forget, if you've not yet bought your tickets, you can get them now from villagaiety.com or by calling 600-555. Don't forget to check out the Spotify playlist by searching for Manx Theatre Podcast. There's almost 140 tracks on there now and over 9 hours of show tunes to satisfy your musical theatre needs. If you have any events you'd like me to talk about or promote on a future episode, you can contact me through the podcast's social media accounts or by email to manxtheatrepodcast@gmail.com. Well, all that remains is to say thanks for listening, and I hope you join me again next time. I've been Neil Callan, and you've been listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast. Goodbye.
The Manx Theatre Podcast, taking a look behind the scenes of Manx Theatre.
Than actors alive for me.